Welcome back, everyone. It's another episode of Inside Boxing presented by PPV.com. It's Dan Canobio. It's the champ, Chris Algieri. We're in unison, or in association, I should say, with Uncrowned and Yahoo Sports. We're coming to you off of a massive boxing weekend. David Benavidez obliterates Zerda Ramirez, stops him in the sixth round, drops him in the fourth round. A new superstar has emerged in boxing. I'm very excited to talk about it with you, Mr. Chris Algieri. For those of you that want to catch up on Inoue and Nakatani, we have a whole episode dedicated to that we put out on Saturday directly after the fight. So go to the Inside Boxing channel and go watch that, because that was a great fight as well. So we had you covered there. So if you're wondering, hey, it's Sunday, are they going to recap the entire weekend? Well, we already got you covered. Saturday we did Inoue. We gave it the proper respect that it deserves. And today we give you Benavidez and what was an outstanding card top to bottom, a PBC PPV.com offering for you. How are you, Chris?
I'm great. I'm tired. This is a lot of boxing this weekend. I had Pro Box TV on Friday night. I got up early to watch Inoue. You and I podcasted immediately after for the reaction, which a lot of people were DMing me. Hey, that fight was amazing. You got to do like a show just on that. I'm like, don't worry, man. It's coming down the pike in a couple hours, literally maybe minutes. This will be out. So I'm glad that we were able to offer people the immediate reaction for Inoue, which the people have spoken. They've been tuning in. But now we got to talk about what happened on Saturday night, because what an amazing card. The card was awesome. I kept saying on the chat. And for you guys who weren't in the PPV live chat, you really got to get on that, because we have so much fun in that chat. 5.5 hours, Dan. 5.5 hours, you and I were in that chat talking.
I was in the arena, man.
Oh, yeah, you were in the arena.
It was a long-ass card.
I was on my couch with my dogs, and they missed me. They were on my face, basically, as I'm typing. They watched the fight with me. But no, it was a fantastic card. I kept saying in the chat, I'm like, the matchmakers, the promotion did such a fantastic job putting together good fights. Guys who were really going, getting after it from the opening fight until the main. Just great night of fights. And Dave Benavidez living up to the moniker of the monster.
The mugger.
He mugged him. Yeah, he did more than
he mugged him.
He's got firepower at cruiserweight. He's not a mugger anymore.
Okay, we'll get to that.
He's full on artillery. Full on artillery.
A lot of questions. I want to get your thoughts on that. But yeah, promoters did a good job. You know why? Because they put Mexicans, full Mexican card. Just do that
both
every
sides.
Time.
Just both sides. Mexican, man. We love Mexicans, man. We love Mexican fighters. We love Mexican culture. We love Mexican fighting spirit.
Yes.
We should just do full on Mexico versus Japan cards from now on.
Both
cultures just fight. It's awesome.
That's why this weekend was amazing. We had the biggest fight in Japanese history, Inoue Nakatani, and then we had the Mexicans going at it in Vegas. And people were asking, what's the vibe like in Vegas? What's the buzz like? I'm like, yo, this media room is packed. It's the most packed I've seen for a non-Canelo fight week.
Ooh.
So
that's a powerful statement there, Dan. That's a powerful statement.
And a lot of people backed me up on that, because it's because of Mexican fight fans, Mexican media. Cinco de Mayo. It was just a great weekend to be in Las Vegas. I'm very fortunate to have spent the week with PPV.com bringing you some of the content and being in the arena for what was David Benavidez's coming out party. I'm going to say it right now. That was one of the best performances I've ever seen in person. I could argue that it was better than Crawford over Spence, because it was a little more violent and just more like, oh shit. But it's up there, man. For Benavidez to deliver that type of performance on that weekend, when his star power was in question, where his heritage was in question. Is this guy Mexican enough? Can he fill out a stadium? Can he carry Cinco de Mayo weekend? He does it with Canelo in attendance, the guy that has been the guy for the last 10 years who he's been calling out. The viralness of the knockout alone is going to live on for a very, very long time. Already went on TikTok and seen a ton of edits. It was just the perfect performance from a guy that's now coming into his own in David Benavidez over a champion in Zerda Ramirez, who's never been beat up like that. So David Benavidez passed with flying colors and has now established himself, I think, as a number one entertainment attraction in all of boxing.
I've been saying this for the last 18 months. David Benavidez has everything necessary. The formula is there to be the face of boxing. And he stamped his position with that fight. And you mentioned the questions. There was a question about Benavidez's power as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you said it. Listen, Zerto, if he's nothing else, and granted, he's a very good fighter, and I'm a guy who I back him very well, and I rate him very highly, is super durable. Super durable. Even moving up the cruiserweight from 168, he showed durability at 199. He showed durability. Chris Billiam Smith can punch. He took a lot of damage from that guy. Kept going. Dorticos, big puncher. Walked through all of that. David Benavidez stops him in six, drops him, breaks his orbital, busts his face up. By the third round, broken his face teeth. Is a mess. Ridiculous. I mean, yeah.
Bro, he did like the first round, I was like, okay, this is playing out like I thought it was going to play out so far. And that's the hardest part
of
calling
fights.
I'm going
to push back. I'll let you finish. I'm going to push back.
Well, at least for me, like when I'm calling a fight, I feel like the hardest for me as an analyst is the first round because it's so hard to just figure out right away. You're going off of what you think is going to happen. You're what they've looked like in their past couple fights. And I saw a slow plotting Zerto, and I saw a David that was doing the same, pawing with his jab and being defensively responsible and a little bit quicker. The final 10 seconds, the 10-second clap, he shoe shines. And I let out an audible gasp in the arena. I think a lot of people did. The kid next to me, Jason from PPV, I was like, holy shit, that was insane. And he landed some too. And I was like, okay, is he just showing off the speed? Is this a Sugar Ray Leonard type of thing? Last 10 seconds, he's going to try to steal some rounds. Is this a game plan of his? And then the second round, he flashed it in the middle of the round. And then by the middle of the second into the third round, we're like, okay, the hand speed that we talked about is somehow even improved from Benavidez as he's gone up to 200 pounds. I'm like, this is insane. Pounds. 25 pounds. Has gone up to 200 pounds from 175. Like, this is insane to see that in person. So, yeah, like, the hand speed in person, like, seeing it in the arena was captivating, to say the least.
The difference, though, the hand speed was always there, and the shoe shine was always there. He's done that to everybody throughout his career.
Porky.
Oh, yeah, Porky Medina. That was when we first saw that, like, combination that's viral. But at times when he's done that, he's been a little slappy, and the punches mm-hmm. weren't heavy. These punches were heavy. They were fast and hard. Like that last combination that actually finished Zerto, there was left hooks that hit. You saw sprays of sweat. Boom, like boom, boom, and multiple in the same combination. Those are not slapping punches. Those were heavy, explosive shots. Yeah, and so the first round, this is where my technical pushback is going to come from. It wasn't like I expected. Yeah. I expected Zerto to do Zerto things. And Zerto, technically, is actually very good. And I did a long breakdown for PPV.com, which is on my Instagram. He's got good level changes. He escapes out the weak side, which is for a southpaw, is going out to the right. He does that very well. He stays long. He didn't do any of that. He was falling over his skis immediately. He was covering up with a passive guard immediately, waiting to get hit. And as the fight wore on, and I said this in the chat, I saw a man who was broken before he even stepped in the ring. And
yes.
Benavidez alluded to that. He's like, we sparred. We spent 200 rounds together. I've hurt him. He knows it. He fought very much like he knew what was going to happen that night. He knew.
Not only that, Chris, I don't want to cut you off. You want to keep going?
Nah, I'm just saying, Zerto, he knew he was getting his ass whipped that night, and he sure did.
Yes, because our friend Sean Sattel said this, and I 100% agree with him, too. I went right up to him when he said it. He was doing an interview, and I felt the same way. It's almost like Zerto accepted his fate this week.
Yep.
He is the unified champion at Cruiserweight. He was the B-side in this fight. It was the David Benavidez show. There was a moment at the weigh-in, not a big moment, but a moment nonetheless. There was a big mariachi band came up on the stage. It was like a high school mariachi thing. And Zerto had already stripped down to step onto the scale, and he didn't know that the mariachi band was coming out. So he had to take a step back as Benavidez made his way onto the stage. And there's Zerto just sitting in his underwear like this. And there's an entire mariachi band in front of him, and he's just sitting there waiting for his time to go up there as the champion. On top of that, he's talking about retirement. He said it to me in our media session. I heard him say it to Marcos Vegas from Fight Hub, saying like, yeah, I'm done. He said what he said to me. He goes, I got like one, maybe one or two more left in me, and then I'm done. I want to be an actor. I want to fight Usyk. I want to fight Joshua. Like, to me, you can attest to this even better than me. Like, when a fighter starts talking about retirement, they're retired.
Yes.
And before we get to his game plan, which I thought was horrendous, and his performance was really bad, I just felt like he almost accepted his fate before the weekend started. And with the sparring, too. Like, to your point, like, with the sparring, he's like, I think we know how that sparring went. I think Benavidez got the best of him in those 200 rounds.
I don't think we have any reason to ever doubt anything that David Benavidez says. When he tells you he whipped your ass, he whipped your ass. Because he's just not that kind of guy. I've interviewed him. You've interviewed him. I've been interviewing for years, you know, through ProBox TV.
He's blunt.
Him and his father have come on. And if nothing else, those gentlemen, the Benavidez family, I've talked to all of them, are just super genuine people. They just tell it how it is, man. Blunt is a good word, but like, they're just truthful. And they speak the way you're supposed to speak. And I've been saying that about David. And that's one of the reasons the first time I interviewed him, I was like, this guy's going to be the face of boxing. Or at least he should be. Because this
You've been saying that for a while.
Because this is what boxing needs. You need a guy who talks like he talks, walks like he walks, fights like he fights, and wants all the smoke. He avoids no one. He calls out the best fighters no matter where they are. He will move up. We've seen that. He will bounce around. Oh, you don't want to fight me? Cool. I'm going to go look for something bigger, better, make more money. I love everything about the way David Benavidez moves. And then when he goes out there and does what he does, like, it's almost secondary. Like, yeah, that's just the way he fights. He's going to whip your ass. He's going to beat the shit out of you. And I used to say, oh, he's not a big puncher, but he's going to beat you up. He's going to beat you up. He's going to break your will. Apparently, at cruiserweight, he can punch, too. So there's that. But yeah, Zerto just, whatever he brought that night wasn't much, but the aura of David Benavidez had him beat long before they ever stepped in the ring.
Well, let's get to Zerto now. Like I tweeted out that I thought he had one of the worst game plans. I thought he didn't execute. I thought he didn't move his head. I mean, we kind of knew this heading in, but I didn't think he would kind of look that poor. Like, he's very slow. To begin with, we know that. So, but I didn't think he was going to stand in front of Benavidez. He didn't move his head at all. He was a stationary target. He was cannon fodder for Benavidez in there. And I just thought it was a horrible game plan. I didn't expect him to be on the balls of his feet, bouncing all over the place. But like, maybe you can kind of offer your technical thoughts here. Was there any part of you with Zerto where you're like, okay, that's not the way you should have fought this fight?
I saw it immediately, first 30 seconds. I was like, "What are we doing?"
If you're not a mover, can you teach an old dog new tricks? Can you tell a Zerto to move more?
It's not that he's not a mover, because he's not. Yes, he has slow feet, and it's not that he's not a super stationary guy. He cuts angles. He actually does cut angles. For the first six rounds versus Bivol, or maybe five rounds, it was actually a competitive fight. Like, he was in the fight. He ran out of steam and then started putting himself on the ropes. And was just getting outworked and outskilled in that fight, which it's Bivol. I understand that. But this fight, he didn't muster up anything that he would need to do against a guy like Benavidez. It seemed like he just like taking all the sparring away. He fought that fight like, I'm the bigger man. You're coming to my weight class. This is my championship. I can stand in front of you. You can't hurt me. You're not a puncher. I'm going to fight you. But I think he also knew that he can hurt him because they sparred. And he fought a very slow-paced, methodical, heavyweight-style fight to be in front of you. Kind of the way he fought Billiam Smith. But there was just no shimmy. There was no thought process to
lateral
it.
Movement.
There was no angling. Because, listen, he cuts angles, boom, boom. And then he goes to the body really, really well. We've seen him at his best do all that. Did none of that. Right away, I saw him heavy over his front foot with his hands. I was like, oh, dude, you're a sitting duck with a guy who's got faster feet, faster hands, faster combinations, a good jab. And he offered up very, very little almost immediately.
I know there's a lot of talk about if Benavidez will go back down to light heavyweight and what's the right weight for this guy. I've been saying it since he arrived at 168. Oh, he's too big for 168. Then he goes to 175. He has a little bit of struggles early on, eventually settles in. Now he's at cruiserweight. I thought he looked pretty damn comfortable at cruiserweight. Like, I think this is his weight.
I agree. I don't think he should go back to 75. As much as I want to see him in Bivol, as much as I want that fight, and it seems like that's the fight that's going to happen next, He may be rethinking that because of how good he felt. He said it beforehand. And a lot of guys, we say everything before fights. We're like, oh, this is the best training camp of my life, blah, blah, blah. And then you find out after if they lose, they're like, oh, I had a bad elbow, my knee was hurt. But like, no, he said going to fight, he's like, yo, he's like, this is the best I ever felt. Like, you're going to see the best version of me. And we did. Because the power was there, the conditioning was there, the combination punching was there, the gas tank was there, the speed was there. Because there was a worry. People were like, ah, you know, putting on the extra weight, is the speed going to be there? Guess what? Bro. The speed was there in spades. So
fastest he's ever looked.
Yeah. So I agree with you, Dan. I think Cruiser is actually where he should be. And I'm not gonna mince words here. I think he has a real stake at heavyweight at some point.
We'll get to that in a second too, because
Jim Lampley was right. Jim Lampley was right. He said it.
I know.
He said, "I'm going to see David Benavidez as a heavyweight champion someday."
Crazy old man. It's very possible. Take. No, Lampley did say it for a while, and I did ask Benavidez straight up, and he didn't rule it out. He just said not yet. But that, I mean, if you want to really chase greatness,
that was before the fight, right?
Yeah. Afterwards, too, he said the same kind of the same spiel. Like, guys, come on, enough with this heavyweight stuff. Like, I just got the cruiserweight, but that's what we're going to have with Benavidez. He's that type
spent,
of fighter
what,
now.
What did he spend at light heavyweight? Three fights? The guy is, the guy is moving fast.
But going back to him as a cruiserweight, I thought he was a lot more measured in there. He threw 44 in the first round, 56, 58, 63, 54, 50. It felt more natural. His output, obviously the power is there. The speed, I've never seen a cruiserweight throw punches like that, with the speed. I'm telling you, man, like you saw it on your screen in person, it was unreal. It's the type of performance where people are going to go want to watch this guy fight live now. He's must-watch TV. He's elevated. He always was, but now even more. Because to do it on this stage and do it in like what I said earlier to open the show, like how he did it, like the timing of it was insane. But another question I wanted to ask you, I've been dying to ask you, but I waited till the show. Roy Jones famously went from light heavyweight to heavyweight. What did he weigh for the Ruiz fight? 210?
208, 208, if that, yeah, something like that.
Okay.
210 is lower. 205 to 210.
And he was up there in age. He wasn't 29 like Benavidez was. I haven't heard much of this discussion. Benavidez going from 175 to 200 for this fight, or 196, so 200 on fight night for sure. Back down to 175. I mean, know what happened to Roy? He killed him. I wish we all wish he never did that, and he got knocked out. Do you see any of that happening to Benavidez, where if he goes from 200 back down to 175, it's going to be a dangerous move?
There's always the potential, yes. No, never mind. Roy was 193 when he fought John Ruiz. I've just looked it up.
All right, so he went up 20 pounds.
193.
So Benavidez went up even higher.
He was in 198, I think.
Yeah.
Right? So, still under the limit.
On fight night, Benavidez was definitely over 200.
Yeah. So, is it possible? Yes. There is that. I'm not sensing it. Again, because you mentioned the age thing. The age thing really matters. And so, this is why. If you look at Roy at 196 when he fought John Ruiz, he put on a tremendous amount of lean tissue. He actually transformed his body into an entirely different athlete. And he fought, you know, typical Roy Jones stuff, but not as busy. You know, he fought more heavyweight measured because he had John Ruiz in front of him. Kind of like Zerto, a slower guy who doesn't have feet. But Roy was immaculate that night. He looked amazing. But he was a different build. He built himself into, he created armor to deal with the heavyweights, the heavyweight division. I didn't see that with David Benavidez, and I'm not. He actually looked okay. I, you know, a lot of people are saying it. I've had chats, and they're like, "Ah, he's just gonna be fatter than ever." I'm like, "No, he didn't look bad. He didn't look any worse than he normally does." I would say, maybe a little less lean in the face, whatnot. But you know, he's not a body beautiful guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. He's a great athlete, and he's in shape. Obviously, not everyone's shape looks the same, but in terms of him going back down to 75, I have a lot less trepidation thinking about that than I did with Roy, because Roy put on so much lean tissue. Like, it was muscle. He put on, his everything grew. David didn't look that different, honestly.
No, he really didn't.
Didn't look that different.
He's not like that. That's not his physique. Like, you know, he's not a muscle guy. Nope. I remember where he was in the next room over when we were doing our media session. He was doing the promo shoot for Golden Boy Horizonte, you know, took his shirt off, and there was like people saying, like, oh, doesn't even look like a boxer. Like, he's not like cut. He's not. He never was. He was he's a fat kid at heart. He was like 300 pounds when he was like a teenager. It's like the story of like a lot of boxers out there. You've gone into boxing to get in shape. You got into boxing to stop getting bullied. And now he's the bully. He's a fucking mugger. Yeah, that was some pretty awesome shit, man. Inside of that arena, everyone was buzzing. Like, I think everyone had a collective, like, what did we just watch? Because there isn't anyone in that arena outside of maybe Benavidez and his immediate inner circle that thought he was going to do that, win that demonstrably, stop him, hurt him, beat his face up like in six rounds like it was nothing, like a hot butter through knife. No. No, Dan. No. A hot knife through butter. Fucking Vegas, bro.
It wasn't Vegas. That was just you. That's just
Vegas plus my brain is not a good thing.
We're going to call those Danisms. That's a,
like a
that's,
hot that's a butter through knife, Danism. I said, bro. I said a hot.
We know who butter who through knife. We know who bred your butter.
We know, bro. You put me in Vegas for 4 or 5 days with my brain not good.
Big Butter owns Point Dan. Team. Big Butter owns Big Dan.
Oh, God. Had a great dinner. Beauty in Essex. Shout out Chris Santos.
Yeah, Chris Santos is the man.
That was a great huge dinner Friday fan. Night. Huge. Set me up. Corner booth.
Great
it was
guy.
Amazing.
Great guy.
Amazing. Yeah, my point is like the arena was buzzing because it was already like at a fever pitch when the main event started, even though it was super late. Because every fight was good.
Literally.
So
literally,
everyone was like,
every fight.
Yeah. Like even if the fights, like there was no boring fights. They were all exciting rounds. Like we'll get to the undercard. Yeah, but I want to talk about what's next for Benavidez because he has a slew of options at multiple weight classes. He has told me beforehand, Benavidez versus Bivol is 90% happening. This has come right from the mouth of Benavidez. That's right there at light heavyweight. It could happen. It could be a PBC, same thing, PBC matchroom, September type of showdown. Then there's Jayapataya at cruiserweight, who is, I think, the second best cruiserweight in the world because I think David Benavidez is the best cruiserweight in the world now. It's wild. So, like, I want to ask you, what do you want to see more? Or where do you think we as boxing fans should focus our attention for the next David Benavidez event? Should it be Bivol at 175 or should it be Opataya at cruiserweight?
No question, Bivol. He needs to go down to 75. He needs to conquer the man who conquered the man who wouldn't fight him. And that's Canelo Alvarez. There's no other way about it. He has to go down to 175 and fight Dimitri Bivol because Canelo wouldn't fight Benavidez at 68. He obviously went up to fight 75 against Bivol. Actually went up to 75 to beat Kovalev, and he did, amazingly. And then he went back up again to fight Bivol, which was a mistake, obviously. Takes the loss. So you don't want to fight me? Cool. I'm going to go beat the guy who beat you. How about that? There's no better smack in the face for David Benavidez than to go back down to 75, fight Bivol. Not saying he beats Bivol, but hypothetically, he goes down there and he beats Bivol. He has everything over Canelo at that point. You didn't want to fight me. Cool. You went up, you lost. I went up, I beat that guy. I went down, excuse me. Went up, went down, and beat that guy.
Went around.
All around.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Opataya fight has a lot of roadblocks and a lot of problems.
But there's
made.
Time on that. They can fight.
There is time later. On that. There is time. They're the same age. Both young. Around the same age. There's time. The Bivol fight is commercially, it's a home run. People now know who Bivol is. Stylistically, it's a home run. We got a technical fighter in Bivol, who's a defensive wizard, who is up there in age, 34, 35 years old, coming off a back surgery. And a lot of time off.
Don't like that. So there's that. Don't love that.
No, don't love that at all. I want it to be at their best. I want Bivol to be at his best. Benavidez is clearly peaking right now. Yeah, I think Bivol's the fight. And I think that's obviously what Benavidez wants. And I love this about Benavidez. I told right to him. I love that you have a plan. And I love that you're vocalizing it to fans. And you're letting everyone know what your plan is and what your game plan is. I want Bivol. Then I'm going to go back to cruiserweight. And I want Opataya. Or I want Beterbiev. Like, he's letting us know, like, what he wants to do. So I think Bivol is going to be next. I think that's going to be in September. I think it could be in Las Vegas. I think it could be another big spectacle weekend where there's promoters working together on DAZN or PPV.com or any of that. So, yeah, I agree. Bivol should be next. And this is another thing that Benavidez told me. It's on our social media right now. Is when I beat Zerto, I think I should be top five pound for pound. Then when I beat Bivol, I want to be number one.
Whoa.
Because of the run that I just went on. 68 to 75 to beating Zerto to going back down to beating Bivol, I deserve to be in the top three, or at least number one, is what he told me. I would have to agree with that.
It's going to depend who's there when he gets there. Yeah. Because you still got Usyk and Inoue fought this weekend well as well, and looked the way he did and beat
a top three.
Beat a top-notch young fighter. Top three is very much there, but it depends what Bam does in his next fight against Martinez, moving up in weight to 18. But yes, he's listen, we spoke about this off air, and I said, listen, he goes on this run where if he beats Zerto, this is before the fight, obviously, he beats Zerto, and then he goes back down to 75 and he beats Bivol. Again, I'm not saying he beats Bivol. That's a whole nother discussion. Hypothetically, he goes on that run, just like he's talking about. Yes, you're talking top three there. You're battling for the third spot with Bam.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also,
yeah,
by the time we get there, Usyk might be gone.
Well, Usyk might be fighting. He's fighting Verhoeven, and then according to Ring Magazine, Turkey's interested in the Kabayel fight, which
like
would
that.
Help.
I like that.
Like that a lot too. Over to Opetaia, who I think is obviously one of the best cruiserweights in the world, if not the best. Benavidez is now at the top of that list as well.
I do. I actually do think he's still the best. I gotta
say. Opetaia?
Yeah. I think he's the guy to beat.
Yeah, but like I didn't come away from that Glam performance super impressed. He's just been there for a long time. He deserves the respect. I tend to have that philosophy when I discuss this. I recency bias is a thing. I just watched David Benavidez blow out Zerto Ramirez, so I'm hyped up for Benavidez. Yes, and Opetaia's been there for a while, albeit against some pretty bad competition. I mean, Ring Magazine could strip this guy because he hasn't fought a top five opponent in over 2 years. That's their own rules. And I don't know what's on the schedule for him, but he is damn good. There's no doubt about it. If Benavidez stays at cruiserweight, the obvious fight is Opetaia. But with Opetaia comes roadblocks now. The man signed to Zuffa. He got his belt taken away. He signed with an organization that wants to get rid of the sanctioning bodies. He made this fight harder to happen, Opetaia. He didn't do it on purpose, even though I think he probably should have read the fine print in that contract. But now a really great fight at cruiserweight between Benavidez and Opetaia has roadblocks because Opetaia signed with Zuffa.
That has yet to be seen, whether or not that whole Zuffa anti-old school no belts thing really stands.
He doesn't have a belt.
Yeah, but listen, you just make it a super fight on a ring card. You put the belts up still. You think the governing bodies are not going to throw in their belts for that because they get paid? It doesn't matter. There's a sanctioning fee.
One of the governing bodies already stripped him, so he's one down. He's got the Zuffa belt, and I asked Benavidez this once again. I said, "What's the percentage of you fighting Opetaia?" He said, "It's pretty bad because of Zuffa." He goes, "It complicated things. I want to fight for WBO, WBA, IBF. I want to be undisputed because I grew up. That's what I was chasing. It's my Super Bowl." He goes, "I'm going to be honest. I don't think it's going to happen because he signed with Zuffa."
Yeah, but
because
this is going to be a major line in the sand, and this could be a very pivotal moment in time. If the Zuffa belt is holding back Jai Opetaia from the biggest fight of his career, is he going to let that fight opportunity leave to keep that belt? Or is he going to say, fuck that belt, the Zuffa belt, fuck that title, I'm going to fight the best guy in the division that's going to make me the most money possible. And I'm going to have the opportunity to fight for something that I've always wanted to be, which is a unified, undisputed champion. Opetaia has not minced words. He wants to be unified champion. But you're going to have to go through a guy like Benavidez if he decides to stay there. He's got two titles right now.
Who's two titles?
Benavidez.
Benavidez, yes. Yeah. And
you're gonna have to go fight that guy.
Opetaia, to me, has won the ring belt. The IBF he was stripped of, and the Zuffa belt means absolutely nothing. So, yeah, you just said that he wants to be undisputed, but it's not an undisputed fight. There's a vacant IBF title. There's a WBC.
Regardless, it's in the process. And listen,
I get that, too.
He beats David and he gets those two titles. What's stopping him from getting the other ones? I don't think anybody.
Well, another thing, too, is I don't think, as much as I'm anti-Zuffa and I'm all about the belts and what they are, even though they have their own problems, too, if Opetaia and Benavidez step into the ring next, do you really, the fans know that those are the two best cruiserweights in the world?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's not going to have, the undisputed marketing. It's not going to have all that on it. It's still one versus two in the consensus of boxing fans. But that's not the case. It is messy because of Opetaia signing with Zuffa. And I have people telling me, Dan, he took the money. He wasn't getting any money from anywhere else. He wasn't getting money from Matchroom. No one wanted to sign him. But look at him now. He took one fight with Glanton. It was on a Sunday night at the Apex in front of no one. And in the process, lost his IBF belt. Leveraging power. And potentially lost a massive, massive payday and huge fight with David Benavidez. So that's what he got for signing to Zuffa. So that's why I think it was a mistake. I ultimately think him signing with Zuffa was a massive mistake. He could have waited a little bit longer, signed a one-off or did something, waited, and then see what Benavidez was going to do. So I believe Benavidez is now a big moneymaker now.
Yeah. I mean, you never know how the cookie's going to crumble in terms of
true.
Who would have thought that David Benavidez was going to move up and smash Zerto and take two of those titles?
True.
And then these guys can call each other out.
Chris, do you want your manager to think that? Do you want your manager to know that? A good manager, does he look ahead and see every possible outcome?
Absolutely. But when you have been languishing, which what it seems like Opetaia has been, and Matchroom wasn't moving in the way that he wanted to be moved. Listen, dude, I'm talking from a fighter's perspective. When you're sitting out and you're watching big fights being made around you, there's nothing that burns your ass more. And you're just you just get angry. You're getting angry at your promotion. You're getting angry at your managers. You're getting sick of the sport. It happens to all of us. And I think that's what was going through. Also, you're looking at the paydays that are not coming your way that you should deserve, and other guys are getting paid that. Yeah. You're never going to know this is going to happen. But also, this hasn't played out yet. And in terms of this move, this could, if what you're saying is the end all for Opetaia, yeah, he made a horrible decision. But we're seeing the Zuffa TKO deals making a lot of concessions. And if they concede and allow him to go fight for those titles outside of it while still being signed, maybe it wasn't the worst thing because he's getting a lot of exposure. He's still going to get that fight. But this is only we're telling the future right now. I don't have my magic ball right now to tell me what's going to happen. But
counter to that is, will the Zuffa might say, yeah, you can go do it, but are the sanctioning bodies going to play along? Because the IBF didn't. They stripped him just because of his association with Zuffa.
It's going to come.
And I've heard this.
But it wasn't the association with Zuffa. It was the fact that they were fighting for the Zuffa title.
Right. Yeah.
So then it's going to come down to how much is Zuffa going to stick to their guns and be like, you're our champion. You got to keep that belt.
Oh, God.
Because Opetaia might go, you know what? Guys, take the belt for now. Let me go.
He can't do that.
No
way, bro.
This is boxing. You can negotiate.
He's like one of the faces of that promotion, bro. There's no way.
He's the tip of the spear for them. That would be a big. That would be a big hit to them. And remember, I said this
bins the Zuffa belt would be amazing. I would praise the guy.
I said this a few weeks ago. I said, what happens when Jai Opetaia is not happy with what's happening in his career, and then he goes, I want out. That would be the opposite of the tip of the spear. He would be.
We're about to find out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, he couldn't predict that Benavidez would go to cruiserweight, and also
be a worthy opponent.
And he's going back down to 175. The whole point could be moot if he fights Bivol next.
I think it is. I think he's going to 75.
Yeah, I agree. That's why he told me 90%. And then, like we said,
he's a very blunt, honest guy. He told you that before the fight.
Well, the fight. I can't tell what fans want more: Opetaia or Bivol. It's pretty great problem to have if you're David Benavidez. Those are two great fights. The Bivol fight is easier to make. But the Opatai one is harder to make because of all these obstacles. Now, another thing I heard this weekend kind of goes in line with this is that, you know, Ryan Garcia versus Conor Benn is in like serious danger of ever getting off the ground.
Really?
Because of Zuffa. Zuffa, Conor Benn's association with Zuffa, and Ryan Garcia being the WBC champion. Once again, WBC does not want to work with Zuffa and vice versa. So it's a similar situation to an Opataya with working with other, and Zuffa working with other sanctioning bodies. So that's something to keep an eye on too. Yikes. Because I know that, I heard it twice. And I also heard that Ryan Garcia is going to fight Rolly in July.
I have heard that. I have not disclosed this to anyone 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I heard that. It's I heard a foregone conclusion. I heard that that's why Haney Rolly's fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Ryan fight was going to be the fight.
Yeah. July, August, Ryan Garcia versus Rolly, which I don't hate.
I don't hate that at all. I think it's a necessary fight. I think Rolly's has been sitting out for too long. He deserves a shot. I think
he was there last night.
I think he earned it because he's already beaten Ryan. I think he was in discussion for the Haney fight, which I did like. And I think he has a much better shot against Ryan than he did against Haney, personally.
Point being is that Zuffa is causing problems. Rico Ali Walsh was tweeting last night. I loved it. Like, they're becoming a, they're getting in the way. They're impeding on fights.
A hindrance, yeah.
They're impeding on fights, big fights.
Which is the exact opposite of what they're supposed to be.
Right? But they had to do this first to get to where they want to be. Like, it's just, boxing can never just fully be open. Like, but now we have the zone with all the promoters underneath one banner. We're seeing, last night was a co-promotion. We're seeing a lot more co-promotions down the pipeline with Top Rank. It seems like there's one network now, and here comes Zuffa. Signing guys, signing champions.
Taking them out of the sandbox.
Come on, it's never going to be smooth. It's never going to be all at once. It's always going to be a separate player, a separate entity out there. It just happens to be the Zuffa one is very powerful and has some big time money behind it. And that's another thing too. People, Dan, Turkey can throw money at this situation. Zuffa, the Opataya, and Benavidez. Sure he can. I agree. And Benavidez even said that up on the stage. He said, let's talk. He didn't say 0% chance. He said, let's come to an agreement. There's always, AKA, let's throw some money at this. if Turkey wants that fight, he'll make it happen. It's just not going to have all the, you know, marketing of a undisputed fight. It's still a unification. It's still a way for Opataya to get the two belts that Benavidez has. Most importantly, it's an awesome fight.
Awesome fight. There is a narrative. These guys are talking trash already. Two best guys are cruiserweight. But 100%, David Benavidez is in the driver's seat. Finally, a guy who's been sitting co-pilot for so long, trying to get the Canelo fight that was just completely barred. It was dangled in front of his nose for so long, and just taking charge of his career. I tip my hat to Benavidez and his entire team, his father, his family.
Samson Lukowicz.
Samson is the man. He's one of the smartest men in boxing today.
That guy can spot talent.
Write that down. He's one of the smartest men in boxing.
Dude, he's the one who discovered Manny Pacquiao.
Yes. Talent scout like you wouldn't know other. But also, he understands this sport, and he works. It's not just about bringing the talent out there. He is a master chess player when it comes to boxing. And in terms of where Benavidez's go, and I don't want to take the credit out of Samson's hands because, I'm giving him glowing remarks. I love Samson, but it's David. David is making these moves. David is the driving force of why he's getting these opportunities. He is not going to be denied by any means. He gets a roadblock, he walks around it, finds a bigger challenge. It's exactly the way you want fighters to fight. And we lack so many of these guys with character and integrity. David Benavidez has the character and the integrity of a champion. This is what the sport of boxing needs. We need more David Benavidezes. We had these guys in the 80s. We don't have these guys anymore. These guys go the path of least resistance. Not David Benavidez. He goes for it. He looks for the biggest challenge possible. He will move weight classes. He will put himself in worse positions because he believes in himself. That's what a champion is all about.
Amen. And he proved it on Saturday night. It's pretty awesome to see. I don't know anyone can even talk shit about him now. Like, I have people still say he's ducking Opataya. You gotta be fans, like fans. You gotta be fans. You gotta be rabid fan or from Australia or.
He's never ducked anyone in his life.
He threw an elbow or anti Canelo or Canelo fans hate Benavidez and Benavidez fans hate Canelo. Canelo was booed, bro. They showed him on the screen last night. Booed. And I was like, wow. Because I don't really think of Benavidez as having a huge fan base. And maybe I'm wrong because I think he does now. So it was obviously an anti Canelo Mexican crowd. It was a number of things, I think, the booing of Canelo. It was clearly driven by Benavidez fans. Then I think it was a little bit of like, Canelo, you just lost. You're not fighting on Cinco de Mayo, even though you're hurt. Your next fight is in Saudi Arabia. You know, like, I don't know. It was a little bit of that, more towards the fact that it was Benavidez's fans. And obviously, they'd want, like each other. It's two different camps within the Mexican fan base world, even though David was not born in Mexico, born in Phoenix.
And we're not a anti-Canelo podcast by any means, but can we give him a little respect for coming back off a layoff and a surgery right into Mbili? Fuck yeah, dude.
It's a great fight.
Fuck yeah, it's a great fight. I'm not maybe a little surprised because I've been calling for this fight for a long time. I knew this fight was going to happen at some point. But to come off a layoff and a surgery to go right into a young, strong ox of a guy like Mbili, yes, he has his faults. Yes, I think he falls right into Canelo's style. But what Canelo are we getting? If Canelo is at all degraded, an 80% Canelo probably doesn't beat Mbili. He's got to be top-notch for that fight. So I tip my hat to Canelo for taking this fight. This is a tough fight.
Absolutely. I said I put out a little video because I got swallowed up by everything this weekend. If you're going to fight for Turkey, you're going to fight for $100 million a fight, $80 million a fight. Turkey gives you a list and tells you this is what you have to fight. I like it. And Mbili is on that list, and he throws 75 punches around. It's one of the highest numbers in all of boxing. It's definitely the highest at 168. So, yeah, you're right. He is tailor-made for Canelo. I think he might walk into something, or it could be a nice Canelo win. But he is going to push Canelo, for sure. He's a pressure fighter, and that's interesting to see against a guy that has legs that aren't as strong as they once were. For Canelo, I want to get your thoughts on Benavidez the heavyweight because that's been asked. He said that he would look at Usyk. I asked him about Atalma, and he's like, "Come on, man." He's like, "He's 22 years old. I know who he is, but like, that's not on my mind right now." Do you think Benavidez could go up to heavyweight one day?
I do. I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, though. I think he has a lot of work.
He told me 5 years.
Yeah, he's got a lot of work to do, and he's young. He's 28 years old, and I think it's going to aid him and actually make his career longer. Because he's in his physical prime right now. And if he can make the weights to make these fights, now he should. Because there's so much. As much as the heavyweight is the glamour division, I don't see him moving into heavyweight and getting the biggest fights possible in positions where he can win them. But I think he can make massive amounts of money at 75 and then cruiser and then heavyweight. And then he's in a better position. The landscape will change. The Usyks will retire. The Anthony Joshua's, the Tyson Fury's, the Wilder, that guard will be gone. It'll be more of these young guys. And he can make a name for himself with those guys because I don't see him being able to handle an Usyk. Because that's who you're going to have to fight right away, essentially, if you're going to look to make big money. He can make much more money at 75.
Well, yeah. I think he will do it. I don't think it's in his foreseeable future because he has such good options now. But I think it's going to add to the lore of Benavidez. Like, oh, this guy can fight at multiple weight classes. We've seen it with the smaller guys, right? Manny Pacquiao, 8 divisions. Nai Inoue, 4 divisions. Like, we've seen that. You don't really see it too much from a big guy. No. You don't really see, like, he's one of the only guys that goes 68-75 cruiser, even though the 75 title was handed to him. It's never really been done. So to see a guy to go from 68 to heavyweight, Roy did it, went from middleweight to heavyweight, so he's one of the greatest to ever lace him up. I think that adds to the lore of Benavidez. I think it could be something that could motivate him, but not yet. Motivate him, like you said, mid-30s. Do you think there's any heavyweights out there right now in the top 15-ish that Benavidez can beat right now?
Yeah.
Can he beat Gassiev?
Former cruiserweight, so that's an interesting one. The problem with Gassiev is he's a killer puncher. Even at heavyweight, he can really, really punch. He's got knockout power, even at heavy.
He's ranked 10th right now, yeah. Gassiev. And could David Benavidez beat Richard Torres?
That's a tough fight. Richard Torres is a vastly improved fighter. He's got a big amateur background. The guy fights like he's shot out of a cannon.
That'd be an awesome fight.
It's a tough fight.
That could be the one down the line. Like the reason I brought up Italma,
he's probably gonna fight a Jai Bataille at heavyweight. Honestly, I don't know if we ever see Jai and Benavidez at cruiser. Honestly, I think they might see them in the heavyweights.
Yeah, I think those two are gonna be linked for a while. El Bataille and Benavidez. The reason I brought up Italma to Benavidez is because it's an age thing.
Yeah, no,
you know, like I said,
Usyk, such a bad fight.
I don't think it's ever going to happen, but I, you know, when you're making these social videos, you got to get names like that because, and I did an aged thing because Usyk, it's not going to fight Usyk. Benavidez is not fighting Usyk. Usyk has one or two more fights left. Like you said, like the Joshuas are gone, Wilders are gone, Fury's gone. It's who's the next guard? Like Wardley, he could lose to Dubois, like Dubois versus Benavidez. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense to me. Atama being still big, he's like 225.
He'd have to do a run like Usyk did. Usyk didn't jump right into the top guys.
Right.
He fought the Chisoras of the world. He fought what's his name? Witherspoon. You know.
Yeah, Chaz Witherspoon.
Yeah. So
he fought Chisora. Yeah. But point is like by the time Benavidez is even thinking about going to heavyweight, you would think that Atama is going to be the established guy.
I mean. Long way to go.
This is a crazy hypothetical conversation.
Yeah, this is a thought experiment that's getting very far outside the radius.
This is why it's the last part of this segment. That's it. The undercard was solid. Jaime Munguia, geez. I mean, that's
he looked good.
The best performance I've seen from his career. He outclasses Armando Resendez, who I don't want to sound like your friend Paulie, but probably the worst champ out there. He didn't do shit. Resendez in this fight. Munguia looked awesome.
I expected a lot more from Resendez, but...
Yep. Munguia is now champ at 160. He's a two-division champ. He had the Bruno Saras nightmare. He had a PED failure. He comes back, and now he's looking good at 168, Chris. I would like to see Jaime Munguia versus Hamza Shahraz.
Whoa. That's
an action fight at 168.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a tough fight.
It's gonna happen.
The pressure of Munguia and the outside skill set of Shahraz, the power of Shahraz, the aggression and physicality of Munguia. Great fight, absolute great fight.
Well, I don't understand how Munguia is not ranked in the top 10 by Ring Magazine.
Really?
That's why I have a problem. Ring Magazine. You got Beck the Bully at 10, Shahraz at 9, Jacob Bank, Caleb Plant needs to be out of this list because Plant lost to Resendez. Yep. Resendez 6, Pacheco. The guy's barely fights.
Munguia is going to be 5 now, at least.
5?
Yeah.
Has to be. Lester.
Lester's a beast.
Lester versus Munguia. Woo!
I've been saying that fight for a while. That's a fun fight.
Think about how loud that arena would be to all the Guatemalans and Mexicans.
Bro, you don't understand what Lester's last fight was like. It was out of control.
I watched.
We're going, he's fighting again at the end of August. And nice. We're going to an arena in LA, and it's going to be
get a little bigger.
Gangbusters.
Nice. So yeah, I thought Munguia looked awesome and revitalized his career. He was throwing wicked combinations, digging into it. I loved it. Like we talk about the lack of combination punching and boxing. I was loving that fight, watching him 1-2-3 to the body. You know, awesome stuff.
He looked well rounded, well rounded, and he looked super. Yeah. He was in good shape. He was in really good shape, he always is, but like he looked strong. He looked like he was much more solid than we've seen him. Like the Saras fights, he looked vulnerable. He didn't look like that.
Yeah. Oscar Duarte did not look good.
No.
Split decision win to Angel Fierro. Duarte, I could not cut the ring off. I mean, Fierro was there for the taking. Who knows? Maybe overtrained. Got to keep in mind the Hitchens situation. Was supposed to fight in February. Did he stop camp? Did he just keep going? If you're fighting in February, when are you starting your camp? November?
Well, I saw him in between. We were at Robert Garcia's gym, and I saw Duarte. He was in the gym, but he looked like he had taken some time off. So
All right. The
start-stop is tough. The up,
it's more of a skill thing.
The up-down is an issue in terms of training camp. He could have definitely been overtrained. Robert Garcia tells me he's one of the hardest workers in the gym. There's that. But also the letdown of being on the cusp of fighting for a world title, thinking you're going to be a world champion, all the media drama surrounding the fallout, and then you're taking a step down with a guy like Fierro, who like They know each other. They spar together. Fierro always misses weight.
What a joke.
If there's nothing else, Fierro is going to miss weight and he's going to overperform. He's going to overperform and lose. That's Fierro to a T.
His last three performances, two blown weights, and he kicked his opponent and got disqualified.
That was insane. He lost to Alex Martin a couple years ago. I was looking at his record. I'm like, oh, man, I mean, Duarte should destroy this guy. And then life or death. Like, he's just, that's just the way the guy is.
Duarte could not cut the ring off at all. He was chasing him around. I really had high hopes for this fight. It was still a fun fight. It was like some controversy, intrigue towards the end. It was still a fun fight. But I was hyping this up to be, I was like, this is going to be an all-out brawl. Can't miss brawl. I thought Duarte would be able to chase him down better. But he gets the win, Duarte. He's looking for the WBC route, according to him. I asked him right on Thursday. That's the Dalton Smith Puelo, but Dalton Smith got hurt.
Yeah.
Jose Sanchez defeats Jorge Chavez. That was a 122-pound fight, which was awesome. Late knockdown. Great fight.
Brutal knockdown.
Brutal. Back and forth. They went at 122. Loved that fight. Ismael Flores upsets Isaac Lucero. He was a big-time underdog. I think he was plus 500 underdog, Ismael Flores. Lands 350 punches in 10 rounds.
That dude looked like a pit bull. Man, they got the wrong guy, man.
Argentina.
Yeah. Yep. I was
It was also helpful. Lucero has the worst defense I've ever seen.
Lucero doesn't have a whole lot going for him. He is a very built-up guy. They were looking. He got his little quote-unquote red hair. They're trying to build this next Canelo. The guy just is not at the level at all. And
no, I mean, I fell for it too. I had a lot of people telling me that this is the next, not next, but like this guy could be an all-action type of fight.
I thought they were the opposite guys when they were in the ring.
Yes,
I'm like, wow, look at this, look at this stud. And then I was like, oh no, that's not Lucero.
Yeah, but that was still a fun fight. 350 landed punches in 10 rounds, bro. Like 300, you get over 200 landed punches in a 12-round fight. I was like, wow, it's a good pace. Over 300, rarefied air.
Ridiculous.
350 in 10 rounds?
That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. Defense just left in the dressing room.
Out the window. So that was the full card. Awesome card. Really fun time at T-Mobile. Great week in Vegas. Everyone that tuned in, really appreciate it. We put out a ton. You had you covered in every possible department. We had these three podcasts.
As usual.
Three podcasts, probably 25 videos, original content with all the biggest names in boxing, and then live content on Fight Night, live coverage in the PPV.com chat. So
we don't sleep, guys, if you haven't noticed. We don't sleep.
Tomorrow I'm doing what I usually do after a Vegas trip. I'm just going to do nothing. I might lay outside. I will decompress, watch the Knicks as they battle the Philadelphia 76ers in the Eastern Conference semifinals. They put a freaking beat down on the Hawks in game 6. 50-point win. Holy shit. That's it. That's our show. I'm going to go get some rest, lick my wounds, unpack my bags. What do you got going on?
I'm going to eat my bowl of ramen that's been sitting here getting cold. And then I'm going to go to work tomorrow like usual.
ProBox TV. We will have another podcast for you later on in the week as we gear up for Wardley and Dubois next Saturday.
May is rocking, man. Love it.
May's here, guys. The best month in boxing in a long time. Enjoy it. Protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Good night.